It's a karma thing.
It's a karma thing. Third person.
Two karmas. Okay. Three karmas. I smell a rat. Ah,
oh, Dawson, look, there's your mom.
Back to you, Bob.
Accept your perfect life, Dawson.
Continues to
982. Back to you, Bob.
Hello, and welcome to Back to You, Bob, a Dawson's Creek podcast. We're your hosts, Christina and Micah, and this is episode 408, The Unusual Suspects, which originally aired on November 22nd, 2000, day before Thanksgiving.
That's wild how they do that. This is not the first time that's happened.
No, it's not. And you know that my butt was in the chair watching Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, and Survivor. You know, Survivor used to air every... They still do.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, thanks for keeping us entertained the day before Thanksgiving.
As my mom was slaving away in the kitchen, making her sweet potatoes, whatever else she wanted me to help with. And I was like, I can't. I've got important stuff to do.
I want to have to see who stole the boat. What is the Dawson's drink for episode 408, Unusual Suspects?
We are drinking The Perfect Alibi. It is ginger, spiced honey liqueur, regular honey liqueur, rich simple syrup, and jasmine tea. Like a little spicy tea number.
Spiked tea. How delicious.
Yeah, why not?
Well, why don't I dive into the recap and find out why we chose The Perfect Alibi as our Dawson's drink?
Let's do it.
Episode 408, Unusual Suspects, opens with a student running down the halls of Capeside High, yelling that everyone needs to get to the pool now. When everyone rushes in, they see that the pool has the principal's boat in it and his dog. It's clear that this is a huge senior prank. So the dog jumps off the boat to the side of the pool and immediately heads towards Jack, sniffing him, making him the prime suspect. But Dawson has access to Mitch's keys since he's a teacher, and that also makes him a suspect. And Pacey having access to the boats at the pier also makes him a suspect. So this episode revolves around Jack, Dawson, and Pacey being interrogated by Mitch and the principal in a film noir style episode to find out who the culprit is. But Pacey swears he spent the whole day with his brother, Deputy Doug, shadowing him on patrol. Jack was working on a project with Drew Valentine and then went to his job as a soccer coach. And Dawson spent the whole day with Mr. Brooks. Even though the painting job is over, Mr. Brooks has hired him to help clean out his house. Mitch brings up something interesting from 4 years ago. Pacey and Dawson's pact from their freshman year that when they were seniors, they were going to pull off the greatest prank ever. But Dawson reminds his dad and principal that that was when he and Pacey were best friends. They don't even talk now. So as Mitch and the principal interrogate Dawson, Pacey, and Jack, they each recall running into Drew or overlapping with Drew somehow the day before. Dawson recalls how he left his keys in Drew's car the night before. It turns out that they ran into each other in town and Drew offered to drive Dawson home. So Dawson remembers Drew returning Mitch's keys. Jack recalls how he and Drew went to the hardware store together. And Pacey recalls how he and Doug went to the boatyard because they got a call about a missing boat and they saw Drew there. And Drew claimed he was there because his mom runs the yacht club. So while they're recalling all these facts to help figure out the mystery of the episode, each of them does have developments in their ongoing respective storylines. Dawson finds a bunch of old memorabilia at Mr. Brooks's house and how it all had to do with him being a former Hollywood director. Pacey, meanwhile, realizes that Doug is not just a waste of life police officer. He actually is a good person who performs good deeds, like when he helps a blind man with his groceries. And Jack decides to start Molly as the soccer team goalie, but he's met with resistance from all the parents of the boys on the team who threaten to fire him and make a huge fuss over him being gay. So back to the mystery, the principal pieces it together. It was Drew. Drew was at the hardware store with Jack, where he bought the white paint used to write Class of 2000 on the flag on the boat. Then he returned Mitch's keys to Dawson, keys he used to get into the school. Then he was seen at the boatyard by Doug and Pacey, the same boatyard where the boat went missing. He busts Drew for the crime and suspends him. As Drew is leaving, he tells Joey to tell the boys that they pulled a fast one on him. And Joey goes to Dawson's, where Mitch lets her in, and on her way up, Mitch says, "Tell Dawson that I know." and congrats. So Joey walks into Dawson's room and catches Dawson, Pacey, and Jack getting rid of all the evidence. But they swear they didn't do it. But they talk through it. If they did do it, here's what they would have done. And we see what actually happened throughout the episode, which is Dawson, Pacey, and Jack pulling off the senior prank and framing Drew Valentine for it to get revenge on him for what he did to Andy. As Dawson and Pacey bury the evidence, Pacey asks Dawson if it's possible that he could ever trust him again. Dawson says he thinks it is, and Pacey vows to keep trying. He's not ready to give up on Dawson yet. And that's episode 408, Unusual Suspects.
What a tangled web.
So this is obviously like the film noir episode of the season. You know, they love doing like a film noir. And this is season four.
Sure is.
So that is why the drink is called The Perfect Alibi, because Dawson, Jack, and Pacey are pretty much criminal masterminds.
They have buttoned up their alibis. Ain't nobody catching them.
I just love it. So who wrote episode 408?
This episode was written by Jonathan Kasdan. He is a writer and an actor. His first credit was playing Kevin Kline's son in The Big Chill, which is a callback to last season of Dawson's Creek. He was 3 years old. And the reason that he played Kevin Kline's son is because his father, Lawrence Kasdan, wrote that movie among many other movies. He's obviously like a huge figure in Hollywood. So he was a little Nepo baby. He just put him right in the movie.
Well, you know what? He's earned his little keep here because it was a solid little mystery.
Yeah. So he has 13 fairly small acting credits. The longest running thing he has is 9 episodes of Californication, which we know was created by Tom Kapanos, and Gina Fattori was also a writer on it. So there's a nice little Dawson tie-in there. And this was his second writing gig. His first was an episode of Freaks and Geeks, on which his brother Jake Kasdan was a producer and a director. So it's all a family affair with the Kasdans. He wrote on a bunch of features, In the Land of Women, The First Time, and Solo, which is that Star Wars movie that came out a few years ago. And most recently, he created a Disney Plus series called Willow, which ran for one season from 2022 to 2023.
Oh my God, that's a solid stacked resume.
It is. And this is his first of 2 episodes this season, and then he'll be back for another 3 next season. So this is not the last we'll be seeing of old Jonathan Kasdan.
Wow. I mean, I'm very impressed with that. Created Willow, wrote Solo?
He's not messing around. He's in the Disney Plus atmosphere.
Did it all start right here? I mean, I know his acting career started young, but what did he have a writing credit before this?
1 episode of Freaks and Geeks.
Oh my God, this man's brilliant.
He's basically a child prodigy.
Freaks and Geeks is iconic television.
The best.
Who directed Jonathan Kasdan's brilliant script?
This episode was directed by James Whitmore Jr., who we know and we love. He's returning for his 5th episode with us. His first episode was episode 210, High Risk Behavior. So if you want to hear more about his career, you can go back and listen to that one. His last episode with us was 323, True Love, last year's finale, which is such a good episode. And he will be with us for 1 more episode. So this is his penultimate directing for the series. He'll be back with us for 1 more episode in season 6.
Well, we love him.
We do.
What is there to say? There's nothing to say, except who's the guest cast shout out this week?
I'm going to give the guest cast shout out this week to Harry Shearer, playing Principal Peskin. Harry Shearer has a wild career. He's a writer and an actor. His first acting credit was in 1953 in Abbott and Costello Go to Mars. He was 10 years old. He was a writer and a performer on SNL from 1979 to 1985. He co-created, co-wrote, and co-starred in the film This is Spinal Tap. He joined the cast of The Simpsons in 1989, and he voices a ton of characters, including Mr. Burns, Smithers, Ned Flanders, and like seriously, like 6 other people. And he has 179 acting credits. So take a look at his resume and you're going to find something that you know and love. But he's just one of those guys, you see his face and you're like, oh yeah, I've seen this face before. I know this face. And I think it's really cool that he did this episode. He will be with us for 1 more episode. But I thought it was great.
Oh, he's amazing. You know, you take one look at him and you're like, oh my God, I love that guy. I know that guy.
Totally. I didn't realize he was on SNL. I think that's really cool.
I didn't either. Wasn't he in a bunch of Christopher Guest movies?
Like everything.
Yeah, I think that's what I know him from.
Yeah. So thanks, Harry Shearer.
Also, fun fact, he was also one of my favorite movies of all time. Dick, starring the Michelle Williams. star of Dying for Sex, Oscar Award nominated, Brokeback Mountain, I forget what her name was, Jack Twist, Jack Nasty.
Hasn't she been nominated for like 3 Oscars?
I think so, because did she get one for Manchester by the Sea? Because she should have.
I think, and maybe The Fabelmans?
Yeah, because did she win for The Fabelmans?
I don't think she's won, no. Give the woman an Oscar already.
I'm telling you, Dying for Sex, what a hoot.
Did you finish it?
No, we just finished the episode where she...
Episode 5.
So good. What about music moment?
There's no doubt for me that it's Crazy for This Girl by Evan and Jaren. I was so obsessed with this song.
Yeah.
Obsessed. Non-stop listened to this song.
Evan and Jaren were like so fascinating to me.
Are they brothers?
They're brothers or they're twins? But also,
I know. What are...
did they have sexual tension? Was it in my head? I don't know.
I was going to say, were they dating?
Do you remember when the White Stripes came out? People were like, they're siblings. No, they're married. And then like, it was so weird. Anyway, this was like the WB version of the White Stripes. Evan and Jaren. Never had another hit.
What about Two Beds and a Coffee Machine? Is that them? No, that's
Savage Garden.
Savage Garden. Damn it.
Who actually are gay lovers. Or just 2 gay men. Just platonic gay men. As usual, we're just making things up.
We just say whatever we want on this podcast. Same for you, Crazy for This Girl. There wasn't much else.
Yeah, there's nothing.
What about Past Versus Present?
You know, I Past Versus Present, nothing.
I think I always like knew that this was a standalone episode in the season, you know, like it doesn't do too much to move the needle, but I didn't realize how stylized it was until I watched it. Like there's a lot of camera effects and sound effects that we don't usually do in this series. So that was like really the only thing that stood out to me. They do like camera flash noises a lot. They do this weird like buzzing sound when they're cutting from one interrogation to the next interrogation. They do like camera pushes and weird POVs that we don't usually have. It was very stylized. I thought it was interesting to watch it and be like, huh, they really took a swing on this one.
It was a little, if I was more familiar with film noir, I'd probably be able to speak on it more. But whereas Indian Summer was a little more Black Widow film noir, like femme fatale. And this one was more, I mean, it didn't really remind me of Usual Suspects that much, except for, well, actually it does, because Kevin Spacey's being interrogated the whole time, right? And then at the end, there's the twist, which I won't say.
What was the film noir episode called in season 2 with the note?
Sex She Wrote.
Sex She Wrote was very much so also a whodunit, but presented very differently. And this one is so different than that. But it's not bad. It's just... different.
Yeah. And, you know, they probably want to differentiate every season, every they probably watched Sex She Wrote and Indian Summer just to give us something different. It's also different, totally different staff since
Sex She Wrote. So,
but like you said, it is kind of a standalone episode. So the recap was a little more bare than usual, but we dive into everything. So we'll get there.
So let's do it. Let's dive in.
Well, let's dive in.
We start with one of the shots I was just talking about when the kid who says, you have to come see what they did in the pool or whatever, the camera like rushes into him, which is a shot I don't think ever seen before. So you kind of knew off the top of the episode that this was going to be like a different kind of episode.
Yes, totally. It was very dark, a lot of shadows, it started off on an eerie, mysterious tone. It was a very stylistic choice and it worked for me.
And then we see the principal's boat in the pool, which is just a hoot. And I love that little dog. And as soon as the dog jumps off, goes right to Jack. Fingers Jack right away.
Right to him.
Right to him.
He knows.
There's no doubt.
What I found interesting about the scene, there's signs in the background that says Gene Green Natatorium. It's Natatorium. Natatorium. Gene Green. Anyway, fancy name for a pool. Didn't know the word.
It also says it's a YMCA.
That is attached to Capeside High, obviously. So if you ever want to say you're going to the natatorium instead of the pool, you're trying to be cool, like regatta, regatta.
Wow, natatorium. I'm going to start using that.
Me too. We're going to be so fancy. This show just saved all of our vocabularies back in the day, you know, and to this day.
To this day. Just so no one makes a fool of themselves, apparently a natatorium is only an indoor pool. So don't be calling an outdoor pool a natatorium. You'll look like a noob.
Don't be a trash. So one by one, every senior is being called to the office, but they zero in on 3.
Dawson, Pacey, and Jack.
Because Jack says the dog fingered him, which is just a jarring thing. It's just the context is just, it's just jarring.
It is. It is. The dog finger Jack. Casey has access to the marina because he put true love in there. And Dawson has Mitch's set of master school keys. So the three of them are suspect. They're sus.
They're sus. The principal's zeroing in. Mitch, it's like a good cop, bad cop situation. The principal is the bad cop. Mitch is the good cop, obviously. And they do a little, that's so Raven. They just zoom right in on Jack's eyeball.
Yeah, they do.
And they come out of it.
This whole scene is like another one where it has a lot of those weird noises that I'm talking about. There's like zip noises when they cut from each guy. And then there's like camera noises in the flashback. And then they zoom into Jack's eye in the interrogation and zoom right back out in the flashback.
Yeah. And I didn't really notice the sound. So I'm glad you pointed that out. I noticed the cuts, the stylistic cuts and the stylistic lighting, but I did not notice the audio. You with your little post-producer brain.
Mm-hmm. Tons of audio choices. I love that. So we cut to the flashback of Jack bringing flowers to Jen's house and knocking on the door. And Jen says, I'm still asleep. And this is a dream where you're a heterosexual. That really made me laugh. He's like, these are for grams.
So funny.
And in this scene, Jack convinces Jen to come help him with his soccer team. And it can count as her community service that she has to do because of the ecstasy.
Which I love. Like, I just love that. I love when the storylines tie in and fold over.
Yeah, he says ever since Andy left, he has been barely getting by and his goalie broke his leg. So like, again, like it was his and Andy's thing. Andy left. He needs some help. And Jen needs community service. Perfect.
It's perfect. Do you think this is all to get an alibi?
Going to Jen's house?
Yeah. No, right? Because this has nothing to do with anything.
No, I think the soccer is more the alibi because from here, Jack goes to the hardware store to meet Drew. And Jen is like, why are you meeting Drew? And he's like, we have a chem project. We're partners on a chem project. It's a karma thing.
Karma is very important.
Yes. It's the first time we hear the word karma in the episode. And I honestly didn't even catch it on my first watch. Not until my second watch was I like, oh, he said karma right there.
Well, then we go to Pacey and the principal wants to know everything Pacey did the day before. And he says, you know, based on the career aptitude test, he took a couple of episodes ago, which again is a fun callback. He got a police officer, so he's going to shadow his brother, Deputy Doug, and he's canoodling with Joey by the cop car, and Pacey's going to do a little ride along.
Yeah, he is.
Which is cute.
They have their usual little snarky back and forth, and they're on their way.
This is random. I love when Joey and Doug interact. It doesn't happen a lot, but it's cute.
I do too. I really loved that scene last season where Doug pulls her over and talks to her about Pacey and how Pacey's going to leave. They have a good dynamic.
It's really good.
Then we go to Dawson.
And Mitch is like, you know, you weren't at the house yesterday when I woke up. And Dawson is not having it. He's like, well, I was at Mr. Brooks's house. Mom gave me a ride. And in the car, he made sure to tell Gail that he lost Mitch's keys. He says, after the movies, I just couldn't find them.
Says, well, you better find them. Your father will not be having this.
Yeah. And she basically says, find them. Don't say anything. Return them. And he won't even know. So Gail's just putty in their hands.
And Gail's down for the cause. She's not a snitch. She's like, you take care of it. I saw nothing. Also, I love the exterior of Mr. Brooks's house.
I know. It's so cute. Another like amazing Wilmington location.
Love it.
Just another reason we should move there and just end it all.
Fine by me.
I mean, end our lives and move there. Not end our lives. Just pack it up.
Just
pack it up and move. End is not the word I was looking for. Or was I? Who knows? So Dawson's there to help Mr. Brooks clean out his house. So the painting job's over. Look, Dawson and Mr. Brooks has a bond that will never die.
Yeah. And Dawson says, I've done my duty. I have repaid my debts. If you want me to help you with this, you have to pay me. And he says, I'll pay you what you're worth. Very little. Oh, he's so sassy.
He's the best.
Then we go back to Jack. So Jack and Drew are at the hardware store. Did you notice that there's a sign for twinkle lights for sale?
I did.
It brought me joy. I feel like it's an Easter egg.
Yeah, I think so too. Knowing what we know now, I think for sure it is. Because as we were told, the set deck department needed to just put in thousands and thousands and thousands of twinkle lights in every outdoor shot.
Non-stop twinkle lights. So Jack and Drew are doing a chem project together. And Drew says, thanks so much for reaching out to me. So nice, olive branch, you know, and I didn't think that you would want anything to do with me because of everything that happened with Andy. And Jack kind of brushes it off and says, you go get the paint and buy it. I have to get some more net for soccer and we'll meet outside or at the register or whatever. So he's very adamant that Drew pay for the paint.
Just smart.
Then we go to Pacey and Dougie.
Yeah, nothing really happens in this scene.
I mean, they eat donuts. Who doesn't love a cop eating donut?
It's true. So I guess the point of the scene is they're doing exactly what Pacey thinks Doug does all day, which is eat donuts. Pacey thinks that Doug is a loser and his job is silly because nothing dangerous ever happens in Capeside. So Doug basically just sits on his butt all day. So far, Doug is proving Pacey right. And then we go to Mr. Brooks's house where Dawson finds an old box and he finds Mr. Brooks's old yearbook.
The old golden blue. This is another scene where they use like a weird transitional camera effect or like a something that they put in post. It's like a dissolve.
Mr. Brooks went to Capeside High. Very interesting.
Did he?
Golden blue.
Yeah.
He's an alumnus.
I didn't pick up on that, but he is from Capeside. There you go. You're smarter than me.
I mean, the golden blue. Those are the Capeside High colors.
Makes sense.
The Capeside Minuteman. Mr. Brooks is a Minuteman. But I don't know, because the yearbook looks like it's like a college yearbook.
But later in the episode, it does say A.I. Brooks was born in Capeside, Massachusetts.
Yeah. And under the big takeaway from this scene is that he finds out that Mr. Brooks was an aspiring filmmaker. And I don't really think they would put that in a college yearbook. I don't know. Feels like something you'd put in a high school yearbook. So Mitch is like, Dawson, you're incriminated because you and Pacey made a pact 4 years ago to do a senior prank better than the one they did when you were freshmen. And this is said in front of the principal. So the principal automatically becomes very suspicious of Dawson. And Dawson just says, you know, that was when Pacey and I were best friends. We don't even talk anymore. Of course, Pacey and I didn't do this. Crazy.
Yeah, which is a great, great point. Really does kind of wash his hands of it. I also, in this scene, thought it was really funny that there was a pitcher of water and a glass on the table. Like they're offering whoever they're interrogating water.
Yeah.
And then immediately in the next scene, Jack is like chugging the water. Dawson's cool as a cucumber and Jack is losing it a little bit.
Poor Jack. He just doesn't have it in him.
No, he does not. He does not. So it cuts to soccer practice. Jack and Jen are fixing the net. Jen is classic Jen. She's like, doesn't know what she's doing. She's falling over. And Molly comes over. Or I guess Jack calls her over and says, hey, I think that you should be the new goalie. And she says, like, I can turn it down. And he's like, I guess. And she's like, great, I don't want it. And she basically says no. And Jen is like, I like her. She reminds me of me. I like that. It's a cute scene.
Another funny thing that happened in the scene before this, when Jack's chugging the water, is that Mitch is like, you pick Jen up at 12:30 or 12:45, whatever he says. And Jack's like, yeah, I think so. Is that what I said? Did I say that? That's the time. Is that what I said? Poor Jack. He just can't lie.
No.
It's too nice of a guy.
Then we're back with Pacey and Dougie.
And this is when Pacey puts his foot in his mouth a little bit and tells Doug what he thinks of him and what he thinks of his job. And Doug is none too pleased to hear that his brother thinks he's a loser.
It's kind of a bummer. He's like, so you just sit here and two cars go by in 6 hours.
But I think what Doug is reacting to, and it's something that I'm glad they kind of put a little bit of a light on, is because Pacey and Doug have gotten so much closer since season one, when he did say all those like horrible things about him in front of Tamara and everything.
Yeah.
So I think when Doug is like really hurt by Pacey's assessment, it's because, you know, they've gotten so much closer than they were. And I think Doug's a little taken aback to think that like Pacey still sees him like that, you know, because he stayed with Doug in season three.
Yeah.
And I think Doug is like, you still feel that way? Like, what?
Totally. Then we go back to Mr. Brooks's house. There's a little beep and it's Gretchen pulling up to pick up Dawson. And Mr. Brooks says, where do you think you're going? Dawson says, I'm done for the day. He says, the hell you are. If you're not back here in an hour, you're not getting your money. You can't just go canoodle with your little girlfriend. He's like, she's not my girlfriend. And gets in the car. And that's when we find out that Gail sent her to pick him up. And
it was supposed to be Gail.
Yes. Then we're back at the soccer field. Kids are eating oranges. How cliche.
So the girl agrees to be the goalie.
Molly's upset because the boys are being mean to her. And she says, when I'm 17 and hot, they're really going to regret this.
Love that confidence.
Love it. Jack is like, they're not going to regret it unless you make them regret it. And convinces her that the best way to do that is for her to be goalie. So she agrees to it. Little reverse psychology.
Jack's so good with kids.
He's so cute.
And then we are back at Dawson's house. Gretchen drops Dawson. Drew's there. Dawson's like, what can I do you for? Drew says, well, thanks for last night. So Dawson's like, yeah, we ran into the movies. You didn't have money. I bought you popcorn. And then he presents the keys to Dawson. And Dawson is so relieved that Drew found Mitch's keys in his car.
And in this scene, Gretchen is surprised to see Drew at Dawson's house. And he tells her that it was a karmic decision to hang out with Drew last night. Again, the word karma comes up.
The word
for the
karma.
Second time with a second person.
Clock it.
Clock it. Also, Drew says, thank you so much for reaching out to me. You know, as the new kid, it's nice when somebody reaches out. Do you think that Drew is being genuine in either of those interactions, both with Jack and Dawson saying thank you for like extending the olive branch? Or do you think he's just a slippery con man and he's just kind of like going through the motions and would use it against them at some point down the road?
Okay, so I think if we're taking the scene for what it is, I think it's genuine, right? Because I think they want us to like Drew in this episode, feel bad for him a little bit. So when he gets busted at the end, mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that. You know, we have to rely on Pacey, Jack, and Dawson to be like reliable narrators in this episode. And we know that they're lying. So I don't know if the scenes we're seeing is how it really happened or not.
That's a good point.
I don't know why it wouldn't be, but just they could be indulged, I guess.
That is a very good point.
The reason it came to me is because Dawson's dialogue in the flashback is like so unnatural. Like no one would ever talk like that. Drew says something like, oh, I wanted to thank you for last night. And Dawson's like, well, I ran into you and you didn't have money. So what else would I have done except lend a good Samaritan $5 to buy a bucket of popcorn? Like it's some grandiose.
Yeah.
It's just like loaded with it's very expositional. So I just didn't know if that was Dawson kind of indulging the story to the principal and his dad or if that was really how it happened. So, but I don't know. I think either way, I think Drew is genuine because I think his narrative these last few episodes have been to Jen, you know, they're never going to accept you. You'll always be the villain. And Jen kind of says something like that to him too. So I think these people reaching out to him, he feels included and he's starting to like shift his narrative a little bit.
Makes sense to me.
He's in for a shockeroony.
A real twisteroony. Then we're back walking down the street with Doug and Casey.
They're looking for a missing dog and we know that it's the principal's dog.
Dun, dun, dun. So then we're back in the interrogation room with Pacey and the principal brings up this new knowledge of this pact that Dawson and Pacey had from ninth grade. And Pacey points out maybe Dawson's just diverting attention from himself. So there's a real sense of Dawson and Pacey playing against each other in these early interrogation scenes. Dawson says, oh, do you really think Pacey's smart enough to pull this off himself?
Dawson and Pacey are kind of throwing each other under the bus a little bit to the principal, which is interesting, but they're not on good terms. So you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, very believable.
When you're watching this for the first time, they don't know who, like, right? They don't know who did it. They're trying to save themselves. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Dawson gets dropped off to Mr. Brooks's. Mr. Brooks is mad that he's late. They get into a fight. Dawson says, you know, just because you're like a washed up has-been who gave up on your dreams doesn't mean you can take it out on me, which is very rude.
The rudest thing I think he says is, I found your yearbook and it says that you want to be a filmmaker, which I think is really interesting because I want to be a filmmaker. And it got me thinking, maybe I don't because I don't want to be anything like you. Okay. I don't want to be miserable and alone. And he just lists all these things that Mr. Brooks is. Mr. Brooks' face when Dawson walks out is like the most shocked old grouchy man face I've ever seen.
I don't like him being mean to Mr. Brooks, even though Mr. Brooks is a little crotchety grumpster.
I honestly think Mr. Brooks likes it. He's like, yeah, tasting my own medicine.
Oh, he likes that Dawson's being rude? Maybe.
Yeah.
A fun sparring partner?
Yeah, exactly. Then we're back to soccer. And man, a full goon squad of dads comes up to Jack. It's seriously like five dads.
It's a gang of dads. One has a denim hat. One has a sweatshirt over his like shoulders. If they were going for like hetero scary rage, like they missed the mark.
There's one guy in like a polo and a khaki colored jacket with kind of like a Danny McBride vibe to me. He's yeah. the only one that hit the mark.
Yeah, they weren't an intimidating dad gang, but they basically say our sons aren't going to miss out on being a goalie because of a girl. Like, we stuck by you when the rumors started, so you better yeah. make our sons, you better do what we want and take the girl out of the goalie position or we're going to cause some trouble for you.
They nominated Gus as lead dad to do all their talking. Gus is like, Jack. And Jack's like, Gus. And he's like, we're hearing a strange rumor that you're going to put that girl into goalie. And he's like, yeah. And he goes, well, no, you're not. If we lose this game, you're going to lose your job. And he's like, okay, like, see you later. It's my decision, basically. I like Jack standing his ground.
This job is, he's been sexually harassed by a straight woman. He's had to live in the closet. He's now being intimidated by a dad gang.
Too much.
Run for the hills. Okay. Run for the hills. Is it even a paid position?
Probably not.
Sir, run. What I want to say is the reason that none of the other dads are talking is because, you know, they're paying the one dad as a speaking role and then they don't have to pay the other dads nearly mm-hmm. as much money because they're non-speaking parts. Just something to point out. I don't know if everyone knows that. So they'll be like dad number two, dad number three, dad number four, dad number five. No lines. They get paid like a flat rate of like $500 a day or whatever.
Would they be extras or no, because they're being directed?
They're featured extras. So it's not the same pay as someone who just like walks in the background. Like, they get a little more money than like the kids playing soccer in the background, because they did probably get character names assigned to them, like dad number two, whatever it was.
Sure.
Maybe they had names, but when you get cast as like a character like that, you get a pay bump, versus when you're just like a character in the background, like, right, you're not in the script, you're just there to walk through and make it, give the impression that it's like a populated world, you know? So they get paid less than featured extras.
Got it.
So something of note, when there's multiple people in a scene and like a couple of them don't talk, that's why. It's a money saving.
Money thing.
A money thing. Even though like the show had all the money in the world, it was 2000 WB.
Yeah, but you know what? The budgets on these shows that you think are gigantic are not. It's crazy. I feel like Gina touched on that a little bit when we interviewed her. She was like, we just didn't have the money. I'm like, how not? How not? We watched it over and over and over again.
I know that now no one has money. But I feel like then they did. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. What do I know? But I mean, you always want to save money. Who doesn't want to save money? I mean, there's a producer. There's one producer whose whole role on the show is to save money at any turn she can, or he. It's called the unit production manager.
Love that. I like that you defaulted to woman.
I really have only worked mainly with female UPMs.
Then we're back with Pacey and Dougie. And Dougie is giving a ride home to neighborhood blind man from the grocery store.
But we don't know he's blind, do we? We don't know he's blind until he gets out.
Yeah. So Pacey's sitting in the back of the car. Doug runs into the store. He picks up this man. The man's wearing sunglasses. Pacey's like, what's going on? Whatever. And then when they drop him off, he takes out his cane and he walks up the stairs and Doug helps him. And this, you see, watch Pacey clocking this like, oh, Dougie is doing some good after all.
But did you notice that Pacey could open the back seat?
Yeah, I did notice that. And that is incorrect. Back seats of cop cars can't open.
I know. Do you think it's like a Cape Side thing? Like, they just don't have crime?
I mean, they do have crime. They had the lady killer.
Well, the lady killer wasn't a Cape Cityan. The lady killer was just passing through Cape Side.
I mean,
but I see your point.
If that's not going to get you to lock your cop cars, then I don't know what is.
Either way, the cop cars need to lock.
Come on.
Mr. Brooks's house is like, and I'm not like a clean freak by any means, but it's giving me just like hoarder.
Got a lot of stuff. It's a little claustrophobic.
Like living in the mess.
Yeah, I can't.
Like, the dust is everywhere.
And Dawson's like, look, I'm not going to let you push me away. I'm here. I'm going to finish the job that I was hired to do. Then we got to soccer, and guess what? They won. They won the playoff game. Molly did great in goal. She is so happy. And Gus is back, pulls Jack aside, and says, do you know anything about soccer? And Jack is like, yeah, we just won our first playoff game, so obviously I know something. He's like, well, if we have a tie in our next game, any goals scored against us in previous games are going to count against us. So the three goals that little girl let through are going to be a huge problem. And Jack's like, so we won't lose. And he's like, well, you won't do anything because you're fired. Under whose jurisdiction, Gus? Who are you?
Gus is... Gus.
Somebody Gus. Get the head of the Gus. Recreational League out here. I don't think Gus has the power. God. And Molly starts crying in the most convincing way ever. This girl is such a good little actress.
She's so good. A star.
A star.
A star is born. But here's what I don't understand. The one dad in the denim hat walks off with the girl. So, sir, are you against...
your own daughter?
Are you against your own daughter's rights to be a goalie? Like, what's happening, sir?
Wild. I did not pick up on that.
Wild. Like, what is this nonsense? Well, anyway, they won, but they didn't win by enough, is the dad's point, right? Like, yes. A little boy goalie wouldn't have gotten any goals off.
Right.
Shots off. Points off? Anyway.
Anyway, whatever it is, it wouldn't have happened if it was a boy.
If I were a boy. That's so funny. Because when you were talking about it, I was going to say, who runs the world? Girls. When you were talking about Molly winning, but I didn't say it. But then, if I were a boy, just popped into my head.
You have Beyonce on the mind.
I do. And who knew she would be so applicable to this episode?
Not me.
Anyway, Doug and Pacey go to the boatyard because they got a call. And they find Drew.
They got a real call and they got an anonymous call. And they find Drew there. Drew's like, yeah, I'm the one that called you because we got an anonymous call that there's a boat missing. And Doug's like, well, isn't that coincidental? Because we got an anonymous call. And who's to say that you're not the one that took the boat? And he's like, look, I don't have a boat on me. I'm out of here. And Pacey says, I'm going to catch a ride home with Drew. And that's one of my favorite lines. Dougie goes, newsflash, you hate Drew.
And Pacey's like, it's a karma thing.
It's a karma thing. Third person.
Two karmas. Okay. Three karmas. I smell a rat.
Two karmas might be a coincidence. Three karmas. Something is amiss.
I may have a new nose, but I can always smell a rat.
That's a good catchphrase.
It's Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Of course it is.
But I always said if I got a nose job, I would say that all the time. I would get a nose job just to say that all the time. But what's funny is, not funny, Doug looks so good in the boatyard scene. Like, that lighting working for him.
Completely.
Whoever was on makeup that day, he looks great.
I feel like he looks pretty great this whole episode, to be honest. I was noticing that.
But he really popped.
He does. He should only come out at night.
And it's funny because Joshua's hair, now, like, he shaved it, right? So, but it's like growing out. And it's kind of in that awkward growing out phase.
Yeah.
Where it's like spiky, like has no choice but to be spiky.
Yeah, has nowhere to go. It can't like flop over, just going straight
up.
Yeah. Still looks good though.
Of course. So let me go back to the principal, like relieves everybody basically because he's gotten the story of what they did from 8 to 5 yesterday, 8 until midnight or whatever. And the principal tells Mitch, like, I know who did it. And then we go to commercial. And when we come back, it's on Drew.
Two things of note. When Dawson and Pacey are both relieved from the interrogation, they each mention, you know what? After thinking about it, Dawson probably didn't do it. And Dawson says, you know what? After thinking about it, Pacey probably didn't do it. But you see Mitch clock a little bit off to the side.
Yeah, that's when Mitch knows. This is when Mitch figures it out.
They've changed their tune. Mitch then says to the principal, are you satisfied, Dave? And the principal says, yes, Mitchell, I am very satisfied. And we've never heard anyone call Mitch Mitchell before.
No, very formal at Cape Side High.
Very formal.
So then we go and Principal Peskin says, you know who did it? We cut to Drew. Drew looks great. Principal Peskin then goes through his theory and we see Drew in these made up flashbacks at the paint store doing all these things from the principal's point of view based on his theory. Drew just kind of takes it. Like Drew's putting it together now. He's been had.
The principal's theory is at 10:30 a.m. he was at Harry's hardware store buying white paint with Jack. At 1:30 p.m. he returns Mitch's keys to Dawson and that he could have copied those keys at the hardware store when he was there at 10:30 a.m. And then at 9:30 p.m. he was at the storage behind the yacht club with Pacey and Doug. He was seen at all of the places he would need to be to pull this crime off.
They got him. He's suspended for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And while he's packing up his locker, Joey walks by and Drew's like, tell your boys, congrats, or that karma caught up with me. Joey's like,
He also called her Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's funny.
And I didn't really even put together that Harry Potter was out so early. I mean, I guess it was. I wasn't a Harry Potter person.
Yeah, because I had to read Harry Potter for college, going into college. My intro to communications class, Communications 101, was taught teaching you like about every medium, but they used Harry Potter as like the example, because Harry Potter, it came out of fall 2001, the movie. So like that was theatrical. And then like they took us through every.
Yeah, I just looked it up. The first book was 97. The second book was 98. The third book was 99. And the fourth book was 2000. So I guess there were four books out.
Yeah.
Crazy. So that's when Joey's like, what the heck is going on here? Then we go to the cutest Casey and Dougie conversation. Casey's standing there holding his donuts. And Dougie comes out of the police station and Casey says, I wanted to say thank you for letting me ride along. It was illuminating. And Doug is like, yeah, okay. Everything you say is sarcastic. And he's like, no, I'm telling you I was wrong. I would be so lucky one day if I got to ride shotgun with you. And Doug says, I don't think that that's a good idea. And Casey's like a little bit upset about it. And he says, no, I think you're a daring original. And I think you were born to break the rules, not enforce them. And I actually admire that about you. And Casey's like, you admire me? And they just have a really cute brotherly moment.
It's super cute. And I'm glad they got back to the place they were at, you know, season three and before this, because it's cute to see them spar, but it feels like they've evolved from where they were.
And it feels like they're closer than ever, to be honest, after this episode. Love it.
Because Pacey sees that Doug has a heart of gold.
Sure does. Also, I thought it was weird. So when the blind man gets into the cop car, Doug says, don't worry, the guy in the back seat isn't a perp, it's my little brother. So the guy says to Pacey, hey, Witter Jr. or Junior Witter, one of the other. And when Gretchen walks in on Dawson on the computer, she says, hey, Junior. Why did she call him Junior?
That's a great observation.
It's weird that they were both called Junior in this episode. The first one makes sense to me. The second one did not.
Maybe it was an ad lib? I mean, who knows?
Who knows? Dawson's internet search is a real throwback to what the internet used to look like.
I know. God.
And he discovers that Mr. Brooks has an extensive film career.
Look at that GeoCities website. This is when he finds out that Mr. Brooks actually did make it in Hollywood.
Indeed. And he is stunned. Then we go to Jack's house and Caroline brings Molly to the house. And Molly is so upset. Again, the child is a star. She's crying real tears. And Jack's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I got you fired. Okay. Yes, this is a very wonderful scene. The two of them together, I love. But if I were Jack, I would be saying to Caroline, bitch, you got me fired. You told everyone that I'm gay and that's why I'm fired. Why does Caroline have no repercussions for this? She just gets to stand by and watch them have their cute moment. No, I don't like it.
Well, I mean, do you think it was more that he was gay or do you think it was more that he...
I think that they were looking for a reason to fire him and that was just what they decided they could stand behind.
Interesting. See, I really think they fired a girl beat out their sons.
Yeah, I think they hate women for sure. But I think if he won the playoff game and wasn't gay, they wouldn't have fired him. I do think that.
Interesting. I think if he was straight and won the playoff game with the girl goalie,
still would have fired him.
I think so.
Everybody weigh in. Curious what everyone thinks.
But look, Caroline, I think she's a good person, okay?
I don't.
Did she have a little bit of a bout with sexual harassment of a high school senior? Sure.
Did she wear a midriff outfit to a 10 a.m. on Saturday soccer game? Yes, she did.
I am just not into the soccer storyline. I cannot care about the soccer storyline.
Well.
Truly. But luckily it's over.
You won't have to anymore.
Joey shows up to Dawson's house per Drew's, you know, tell the boys congrats. This sent Joey off very puzzled to confront Dawson. When she walks into the house, Mitch is like, he's upstairs. Oh yeah, tell him I know and good job.
And congrats or something like that.
Joey walks in on Dawson and Pacey throwing out a bunch of stuff and in stumbles Jack from the ladder.
No, he comes in through the window and he says, it's a bitch getting up here without a ladder. What did he do? Oh, yeah. Scale the side of the house?
He did the trellis, I guess.
That's so funny.
Per canon, the trellis is at the McPhee's house that Pacey climbed up during Bruce Springsteen's Sad Eyes. Was that when Pacey and Andy fought over her involvement in the movie? Or he wanted her to, like, what were they fighting over? Something silly.
I don't remember.
That was when she was, like, right about to pop. By pop, I mean have a menti bee.
She was like a little tea kettle ready to steam.
She was getting ready to blow.
She was almost seeing Tim. Almost. And then Dawson says, you know what? We didn't do it. But if we were to have done it, this is how we would have done it. And he walks us through step by step what they did. And, you know, it was a pretty good plan. And it all comes back to karma.
Because of what Drew did to Andy.
Drew's not a good guy.
And Jen. He basically framed Jen. And also, what gives me so much anxiety, so when Pacey is shown painting the flag of the boat, he also has the dog. But the dog's not on. The dog is just walking free.
The dog is loose.
And it's like, wow, to steal a dog. And then, I mean, it's a golden retriever. So I don't know. I don't know if they don't run away. I know my dog is half golden retriever and his head is on my lap literally now. But still, to take that risk, classic Pacey Wetter, just fast and loose.
The loosest. Also, I don't buy that Pacey's handwriting is that neat, but, you know, whatever.
I know. His paint handwriting.
Yeah.
Painting is really hard. It's not easy to, like, write a word clearly like that.
Well, maybe he should have been the artist. Maybe he should have been going to France.
Oh, my God. You just made me... He painted Ask Me to Stay.
Oh, my God. You're right. And that was really great, too.
It's canon. Pacey is really good at... painting words.
As Caroline said, try to find a plot hole. There are none. They don't exist.
So they're burying the body. They're burying the evidence. Dawson and Pacey are burying everything.
And it's really nice to see the two of them working together. We've seen them together this season, but it's never in a good light. And they're, you know, working together towards something. Pacey says, is there ever a chance that you're going to trust me again? And Dawson is like, I don't know. And Pacey says, well, I'm not ready to give up on you. So
I'm going to keep working on it, which is wild because they had to trust each other to pull this off. Like they had to trust each other not to rat the other one off.
I thought that too.
But I like that they, you know, followed through on this pact from 4 years ago.
Agreed.
How do you think it went down? Do you think like one of them reached out to the other one?
I think so. I think it was, there was probably a buzz around school of like senior prank. It's that time. Are we going to do something? And they probably made eyes in the hallway and were like, it's you and me, kid.
What I meant to say was, who do you think reached out to who is what I meant to ask.
I bet Pacey. I feel like Dawson is too stubborn to have reached out, but probably wanted to do it. So then when Pacey reached out, he was like, okay. And the fact that they aren't talking just makes their alibis that much stronger. The fact that everyone knows that they're not talking.
Yeah.
And then it is really just so wild to me that the last line of the episode is Dawson saying, well, if it doesn't work out, we can always just kill each other. What?
Yeah. They're going to kill each other. I mean, they already have pretty much. Well, that's the episode.
Yeah, that's it. We're through it. We're through the soccer storyline. We know a lot more about Mr. Brooks. Dawson and Pacey have had a little communication. Other than that, not too much has changed.
Yeah, things get more interesting, for sure.
For sure.
Gretchen Dawson, Mr. Brooks, ski trips.
Love a ski trip.
Shall we do a creek speak?
Yeah, let's do a creek speak.
So this is from Rach Evs on Instagram. And she says, hi, I just wanted to message you to say how much I love listening to the pod. I'm not far off, 50 years old, and live in the UK. In 2000, I lived in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina for 2 years, teaching kindergarten and living with another teacher from Canada. We were both huge Creek fans, Team Pacey all the way. We used to drive to Wilmington on the weekend to hang out and see if we could bump into Joshua and the gang. We did the studio tour and would drive around looking for landmarks that we'd see on our screen. Then, just before I moved back home, my parents and brother came to stay, and I insisted we go to Wilmington and do the tour again, as my brother was a fan too. So fast forward to now, I'm making my husband rewatch with me. It's so different watching as a proper grown-up. I was watching an episode, then listening to your relevant episode a few weeks as I was all up to date with the pod, but I've buckled down and watched more of season 4 this week. I couldn't wait. Love it.
That's awesome. That's so cool. That's like a little 2 years Dawson's intensive.
Yeah, we've actually been getting a lot of people who've like discovered the pod and now we're doing the whole first 3-4 seasons. So the Creek Speaks are kind of coming back in. We're hearing from a lot of like first time listeners. So we do have some DMs and whatnot flowing in. So that's great.
Nice. Thanks, Rach.
I love a Creek Speak moment.
Yeah, me too. We're so very happy to hear from you guys.
For sure.
What you watching?
I'll tell you what I'm watching. Forever on Netflix. Very YA, very good. It was a Judy Blume novel that has been adapted into like a Netflix limited series, but I do think there'll be a season two. I binged it. So I watched the first one. I wasn't super into it. And then I watched the second one. I wasn't super into it. And then I kind of threw the third one on one night. And then I watched 3 through 8. Like I got hooked on the third one.
What's the premise?
The premise is like first love.
Oh, yes.
The ups and downs. I would say it is similar to The Summer I Turned Pretty, only in the sense that it does a really good job of making me feel those feelings again mm-hmm. at that time of your life. Like all of those first, like we're in the same room together, we're alone, our parents aren't home, or what are we going to do? I'm nervous. Like they're nervous, so I'm nervous. And I think The Summer I Turned Pretty, that's like the only similarity I would say. They're not the same show by any means, but they just both do a really good job of taking you back to that place in your life.
But that's a lot of the reason that I like The Summer I Turned Pretty. Like I just get so pulled back into that. I feel it in my chest. That's awesome. Yeah,
and it's not easy for a show to do that.
No.
Because when you're writing these shows as a 30, 40, 50 year old, it's hard to get in touch with those feelings and create those situations and the butterflies and the angst and all of that. But I thought the show did a really good job.
Awesome. I will check it out. I worked on a show called Forever. So for a second, I was like, are you talking about the show that I worked on 15 years ago?
I am confused. I was confused originally at first because, you know, there's a bunch of Forevers, but it was really great.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about you?
Personally, I'm watching the new season of Taskmaster, which I know I've told you about before, and I know I've tried to get you to watch. It's not for everyone. It's a British show on its 19th season. It's like a rotating cast of 5 comedians every season, and then there are 2 comedians who are the mainstays, and they just make them do ridiculous tasks and time them. There's like different restrictions on each task, and it's seeing how people get creative and complete them. And then at the end of each season, there's an overall winner. It's one of the only shows I watch where I laugh out loud if I'm home by myself. I find myself laughing out loud. I think it's so funny. And this season, the 19th season, is the first time they've had an American comedian on.
Oh, who is it?
Jason Mantzoukas. I love him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it's really good. It's a really good season. And it airs on some channel in the UK, and then it's free on YouTube. Every single episode of the 19 seasons is available free on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Also, if you don't have the attention span for full episodes, there are like YouTube highlights of just the best.
Best bits. Those British shows love doing like a best bits of the week.
Best bits.
Because they do the Love Island best bits, and they do the Big Brother best bits. So just like a one episode a week is like a summary of the week kind of.
I would definitely recommend it. Also, just to put it out there, Caroline Moss, friend of the show, who co-hosted episode 403 with us. She's one of the producers of an off-Broadway show that will be running starting Friday through August. And to bring it all back around to us, it is starring Chris Briney, who plays Conrad on The Summer I Turned Pretty. So if you're in the New York area, you better get yourself a ticket.
That's amazing. Yeah, I saw that in her story. So exciting and unreal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really great. I'm going to try to go. So if you're in the area, definitely try to go. I think it's going to be cool. Oh, it's called Delaria. I don't think I said what it was called. It's called Delaria, and you can get tickets online.
I wish I could go, because New York is that, you know, like the Tonys were this week, and I feel like Broadway's having a moment, like, you know, a lot of good shows and whatnot.
Definitely.
There's Sunset Boulevard with Nicole Scherzinger. There's Death Becomes Her. Is it called More Happy Endings? Or what's that one? That
maybe happy ending.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good ones. You should go see them.
All right. I'll do the legwork and get back to you.
Oh, I am watching And Just Like That.
I can't believe that's still on, to be honest.
So I've been watching. I need something that I've seen 10 million times on while I work. So I've been putting on Old Sex and the City, and just the contrast of watching Old Sex and the City and Just Like That. Now, I know they're 2 different shows. That's why they named it something else. Like they were going for different, but it's just so different. You know, like it's like there's not a shred of that old show in there. It's all gone. It's all stripped out.
Yeah.
You know?
I never got into it.
The new one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the pacing, just watching the old show, they were like tight 22, 24 minute episodes. Everything was tight, quick. And this show is just like slow, and there's a lot of drama. The pacing's off. It doesn't have that witty banter dialogue at all. It doesn't have the smart storylines. It's just very weird. The humor's off. And like, I don't care that they're 60, 50. I don't care. I don't want, like, they mention their age, like almost every scene, every other scene. I just want that to be established. I don't need that to be.
Yeah.
We're old. We're too old for this. Like, we're watching the show. We're with you. We're good with it. We're good with their age.
Yeah, we get it.
Like,
yeah.
don't lean so much into the age stuff. People who are dating in their 50s or 60s still have obstacles and challenges. They're just different from when you were 30. So just lean into those. Harry literally fell and she said, I've fallen and I can't get up. What are we doing? What are we doing?
And when you're friends for decades, like they've been friends for so long, they're not going to be sitting around talking about how old they are.
Yeah, I still love it. But like, I just want it to be better. And it can be good. It's just not, you know.
I do know. It's a huge bummer.
I'm also watching, my partner and I are watching the last season of Ozark. Did you watch that?
God, yes.
I watched the first three when the third season came out. I binged one and two and watched three. And then it was like kind of a long time, I guess, before the last season came out. So he was like, oh, I'll watch and catch up. And then he never did. And then all of a sudden he's caught up. So we're just now watching the fourth season.
Were there only four?
Yeah.
That's crazy. In my head, there was like seven.
Well, because it was so many years. It took so many years for those four seasons to come out. Watching it now, I'm like, how did I put the brakes on watching this show? Like, how did I not pick right back up? It's so good.
So good. I love Tom Pelfrey from The Soaps, but he plays Laura Linney's brother. And I just thought he should have won an Emmy. I was so sad when he didn't. I think he was nominated.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you bring up Ozark because, you know, like the heavy set kind of drug dealer guy who flies them down?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's on Sirens, that new show. He's the groundskeeper on Sirens, which I'll save for a future what you're watching because we're not done yet. But then I saw Mission Impossible and like the attorney, like the tall blonde attorney who was like the attorney for the cartel. She was in Mission Impossible. So I had like an Ozark-y kind of week.
I am glad to hear you bring up Sirens because I had planned to start it. So now I will. I'll start it so I could talk about it with you.
We could talk about it next time. It's super short. It's like five episodes or something.
Oh my gosh, I could do that tonight.
Well, that's all she wrote for Unusual Suspects. Usual Suspects. Unusual?
Unusual.
Because the movie's Usual Suspects. Yeah. That's what's confusing me. What's the Dawson's drink for episode 409?
The Dawson's drink for episode 409, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, is called the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You will need gin, chili liqueur, Campari, lime juice, honey syrup, and Fever Tree Sparkling Pink Grapefruit.
I love when the drink is the name of the episode.
Me too. Me too. It's going to be a good one, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's a good one. I remember that one. See you then.
Bye.